Monday, June 6, 2022, 7 p.m., Town Hall, Planning Board meeting.
Okay, everybody, since the clock now says 7:01, I guess it is time for us to move along with this evening's meeting. Before we start, I would like to just make a point of noting the open space between Eric and I this evening. Our chairman from our board, who had a 39-year career on our planning department or planning board, passed away last month. Complications in the hospital. I happen to have the pleasure and the honor to serve next to him for more than 16 years. Not only a great chairman and a great planning board mind, but also a wonderful gentleman and a very, very smart man. He will be sorely missed. So, in the meantime, I will be interim chairman for this evening's meeting, and I just want to point that out. Moving along, we have a set of minutes from the March 7th meeting. This was a special meeting called. Saratoga Biochar Solutions, and I'm looking to see. this was the March 7th meeting on that. With those minutes, does anybody have any, or are there any corrections or changes that we need to make before we do something with that?
Okay, John, first of all, I would like to clean up all the work she's doing on this, trying to catch up and all fall just far behind. And previously, the minutes were she's transcribing them verbatim,
right,
which I know is extremely time consuming for everybody. I read the December 13th minutes. But I'm a little concerned these might need to be expanded a tad.
Okay.
For example, there's some instances where a board member asks a question, but the question's not clear, and then the applicant answers, but it's not clear what the answer is.
Okay.
And I know there's some missing discussion. We had a discussion about PFAS and biosolids in particular. It did appear. So maybe just going back and taking another run through to kind of maybe pick off the stuff that's a little bit more substantive.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone else had the same.
I noticed that too.
So, I guess reading it myself, my thought was, and I kind of thought this would probably come up, that maybe if we could refer from our memory, or would you like her to try and get just more out of it?
I think I'd have to go back and listen to the tapes
right,
at this
right.
point.
This is March 7th.
It's 3 months ago.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's maybe more assistance we can get for getting all this stuff done. It's a huge job. And like I said, I think she's done remarkably for the vote.
Okay. So at that time, I'm going to still entertain a motion. Okay, and if it doesn't, then we'll do that. So anybody like, and that could be the motion, by the way. So, if anybody would like to make a motion as per the approval or amendments to this particular set of amendments.
Yes, I would move to request that the committee take another shot at the minutes, perhaps with them somewhat more detailed than they presently are. And we submit them.
And the motion, do I hear a second? Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Discussion on it. I would suggest this, Anne. If you know of specific things that you would like to see, or you don't have to go back through and go look for them, but if you could forward them to Katrina,
certainly.
Okay, that could be part of the motion. If those would be forwarded, so that,
and
that way
that
it makes it easier than having to hunt through the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think if others do the same,
yeah, absolutely, of course.
Take a look and see if to their recollection is something that got dropped.
I was looking at it feeling the same way, but thinking we did ask her to not be quite so specific.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that is our motion. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none. Would you call the roll on that one, please?
Eric Berman?
Yes.
Adam Siebel?
Yes.
Ann Perdue?
Yes.
Mike Shaver?
Yes.
Mary Casillas?
Yes.
John Arnold?
Yes. And we will be emailing you. And when we email her to let her know, you know, the specifics, make sure you email with the subject of March 7th.
Should we copy that or just give it to Katrina? There may be something done with you, and that's okay.
I would suggest you just send it to me. Okay. All right, so moving along from that. Next on our agenda, we have Moreau Animal Clinic site plan review. Do we have one of them?
Good evening. Matt here with Studio A here on behalf of Rural Animal Clinic. We are here approximately 2 months ago where we presented the project originally, and the board had some requests for a little bit more additional information, and we since then have provided that. The first being due to the location of the triangular lot on Route 9 and Nolan Road, it was requested that a traffic assessment be performed. Craig Manning did provide that traffic assessment. The conclusions of it were really that site distance wasn't much of an issue. There wasn't going to be a queuing issue on Route 9 at all based on the trip generation. And they provided some existing accident data from this intersection area. The results of the site distance study caused us to shift the driveway location. It's approximately 40 feet or so to the west from where it originally was. Originally, we had it kind of lined right up with the lawn care company's driveway. We pushed it up the hill a little bit, and that basically summarizes most of the results of anything substantial that was found from that traffic assessment. So now it's almost kind of at the crest of that hill. It's going up the hill as you go down Nolan Road and open. The other bit of information I was requested was to investigate the potential of tying into the municipal sewer there. We coordinated with Don Rhodes of the Verge on that. He provided us some drawings on what the existing infrastructure was. And unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be pretty cost prohibitive to do that. The existing force main goes down the opposite side of the east side of Route 9 and then turns down Bluebird Road. There are no structures within 500 feet of that force main. So in order to install a service connection for the sewer there, you'd have to directional drill underneath Route 9. You'd have to get a DOT highway permit in order to do that. You'd have to have open excavation within the right-of-way to create that connection. And additionally, LaBerge informed us that there is some discussion of allowing these properties to the north into the district extension. That's up in the air right now, but he did inform me that the first property that is to connect in this area needs to provide the infrastructure further north for the other properties to connect into it. Being that the vet clinic has a waste concentration that's very similar to standard residential waste, this was very sandy soils. We had no groundwater or evidence of groundwater or bedrock when we did test pits. It's a pretty minimal on-site septic design. It's really for four vets. They don't flush any medication down the toilet. There's no pet waste going down there. Based on the site suitability for it, we would prefer to stay, obviously, with the on-site septic system due to the cost to install a low-pressure system to connect into the force main. And really, those are the main changes that have happened. If you're here last, if anybody has any questions, I can answer them quickly.
Jim, what is the ruling on the sewer? They're within a half a mile. Is that strictly for subdivisions, or is that?
Yeah, that's subdivisions over, I believe, 10 lots or more. And I don't know that that's fully invoked yet. I think it's still in a proposal stage, technically speaking.
There's nothing, anything about commercial?
No. No. I mean, it's your discretion still. You know, the applicant makes good points, but it's really your discretion. If you really want to connect, you can do that.
It is outside the district now. Right now, this property is outside of the district. So, I mean, you were looking at a cost of probably 3 to 4 fold.
I get that it's outside the district, but but we're also in the process of having these subdivisions that are within a half mile. So just, I want to make it real clear that it's going to be just subdivisions and not commercial.
Well, and that is correct, Mike. That is correct. And I think, in deference to the applicant as well, the reason why it is that 10 lot or more size is that there's a scale there that, you know, it starts to make sense at. You know, for a single user, a single connection, it can quickly become out of scale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, particularly if they have to install the infrastructure of adequate size to service a larger potential future district on their own, at their own cost, that's...
That's the part that the town really wants a business to expand. If they need to work with the business to figure out how to offset that cost. Because that was my first thought. I was, hey, what's your cut on the sewer charges for anybody that ties into that line that you paid for all the infrastructure, directional boring and under Route 9 and the whole bit? Because it, you really shouldn't be providing all that for everybody else up that strip to tie into. So I think you make some really good arguments for why you don't really need sewer at that particular location for your particular activity.
The only thing I would ask is there, and you're the engineer, Matt, is there any need for like a reservation of area on your site in the event that we did want to have the municipal sewer? Would it make sense to plan for that now, or easements or anything like that, where the area could be reserved?
I don't think the easements are necessary. I mean, it would be a simple service connection. So
no, I don't mean for you per se. Lateral. I mean, if there is a, you know, a major connection point.
My guess is that would just be in the right of way for Route 9 in that area. If you were going to make that infrastructure connection, I don't think. If that were to go in, it would go in probably similar to how it has been going down 9. And then this particular facility would probably have a small, low-pressure department one grinder pump that would tie into it.
I think what he meant by infrastructure was that they weren't going to let him tie like a one-line hookup under the
No, we need a big pipe.
He was going to have to bring a pipe over and the pipe they were ready to hook on if somebody else wanted to.
Yeah, our discussions were with LaBerge were to be running like a 2 or 3 inch force main to the north so these other properties could tie into it, then have the directional drill under 9 from there.
Right.
And like I said, this thing generates probably less than a 3-bedroom house of residential quality waste. So, I mean, really, the site itself is ideal for on site, especially when you look at the cost difference between the two.
Do you mean what Stewart's and Water did on 9? Did they get the building ready?
No, I was saying if there was a need for an expanded area because of a connection point or a pump station or something like that, and we could pre-plan now and reserve the area to accommodate that, but it doesn't sound like that there's a need for that.
Okay.
How about the service entrance driving in? You said that's at the top of the hill now?
Yeah, so we shifted it. It's probably maybe 30, 40 feet to the west from our
now, house. According to my notes, that was a request of the board from the February meeting that they at least investigate making that move of the driveway.
Right.
That has been done.
Because we were talking about coming around the back and stuff, and we aren't going to do that now. We're just going to leave it right at the top of the hill.
Yes.
Okay. So line of sight is pretty good there. Yeah, from both.
Yeah, according to the traffic assessment.
Yeah, it's a lot better than where it was.
I think, basically speaking, the more distance we have between the entrance and the intersection, the better off everyone's going to be.
Yep.
I just wish in hindsight that we could align those driveways again, you know, between, you know, the nursery across the street, but on balance, I think it's more important to have this driveway further into the site.
That is something that we can keep in mind if that property across the street comes in front of us in the future.
And they don't have a lot of, you know, the landscaper doesn't have a lot of vehicle traffic.
No. Right.
It's minimal.
And I might pay him a visit and see if he might be able to shift it anyhow. Because he's got a nice flat area that frontage there. He could easily shift that.
I think for this instance, it's a lot better for these guys.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, and for everybody going in and out, so.
So, out of curiosity, you have a dumpster service area there. It shows two dumpsters. Is one of them biomedical, or is that all contained inside the building?
I would prefer.
So one's just going to be trash and recycling. All our biomass stuff is not outside.
That's been kept inside.
Okay. Yeah, kept inside until we have them come. It's never exposed like to general outside or public or anything like that. So
I kind of expected that it had to be secured in some way until.
Yeah.
The other point I had in my notes was the traffic study that was done. By virtue of their analysis, it's indicating no drop in service in the build-out condition. I don't know, it seemed pretty straightforward to me. We sometimes, oftentimes, I should say, have an escrow for, you know, a third-party consultant review of the traffic. I don't know, in this particular instance, it seemed like it was a pretty straightforward analysis to me, but we could have it reviewed if you prefer, but it seemed pretty straightforward.
I looked through the accident data and a lot of it seemed to be bad driving, bad accident. So that kind of surprised me, since I would have thought a left turn arrow might be warranted, but it doesn't seem like the accident data would show that.
I think we should have them just to be consistent. I don't know under what circumstances we've made an exception previously. I don't think it would take much to do the review because it is pretty straightforward.
No, probably wouldn't. The other issue that's outstanding is we deferred on a public hearing. This was last heard in February. One time, and there were some outstanding issues, primarily relating to the sewer connection, the access drive, the traffic study. You're doing your SWIP review, correct?
Yeah, LaBerge has provided comments. We've responded. We haven't seen the letter come back.
Yeah. And that might be at me. I might have to submit your stuff to look. Did you submit it to them directly? Your comments?
The response is no, they came back. They were rather good comment.
Yeah, so that's on me. I have to get that off to them, yeah. So okay. That's in my court.
Out of the traffic study, it said that the sign should go 15 feet back, and it's like a one angle, you're at 22 and a half, and the other 10 feet.
Oh, this one? Yeah, that's just, well, actually, the radius.
Oh, okay.
It's a curved sign, so
okay.
The radius is.
I had that call out on the plan then.
Yeah, that's no problem. We have like a little R in front of it for radius. Well, we can clear
it. Okay, just so we can confirm that distance. And your landscaping plan, and I'm by no means landscape architect, you call for, you're going to have to revise it with the traffic because it's just kicked out.
Yeah, some of the bigger stuff.
Yeah, I revised against using river birches. I had one when I bought my house.
Yeah.
Near there, but it's a terrible tree.
Oh, yeah.
It drops a lot of sticks when the wind blows and you don't want it to cover the road.
Yeah.
Sorry, I haven't fallen too in the front, so I would change that.
Yeah.
On this plan, the previous plan you showed the natural grid poles that we're going to have to get moved. I would add that back in.
Yep.
Because there's two. And with the line of sight, I would hate because they have a big.
Yeah, I'll pull out.
Try to work with them as much as possible to get it so that it's not like pole
mm-hmm.
because of that turn.
Yep.
And I watch, it's not a planning board thing, but the sag of those wires is pretty bad. There's an old pole that should come out.
Yeah.
You're going to want to watch that.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of swiping.
Very nice.
Those are my comments.
There should be no overnight stay with the animals, right?
Not that I'm aware of. I think that was the second.
No. No boarding, no overnight care.
Mm-hmm.
I think we discussed last time that it is overnight, it might not live sort of thing. So I'm not doing overnight.
There won't be any barking dogs or any long leashes in
there. No.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
You have like surgical recoveries that stay with that?
I send them home. I don't do any like major like orthopedic stuff that would require overnight care.
Right.
Typically, is at a referral center or emergency urgent care. In a rare case, if they get like a foreign body or something, if they're just not right, we'll keep them a little longer if the owners aren't comfortable taking them home. But if you're talking about fairly critically ill patients, so.
Okay.
is always a good sign.
It depends what problems.
You got approval from the water to get hooked up to the water and all that?
Yeah, we just default a water application. It's a standard sort of food water service connection.
That's some requirement with UZ and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You go over that with him?
Yeah.
Okay. You do have a lighting plan now, correct?
Yes.
Jim, refresh me again. You mentioned something about 3 minutes ago, maybe 5 minutes ago, about something to do with deferring on a public hearing.
Yeah, well, we haven't done one yet.
Okay.
We don't have any.
Because I don't remember us deferring a public hearing.
Well, I mean deferring until we have further information.
Right, we haven't scheduled it yet.
You're right.
Okay, board, do we feel that we have the information we need? Any further questions or further information we'd like this applicant to provide? I heard mention of possibly having the traffic study reviewed.
Yeah, I would ask that the traffic study be reviewed. You know, kick the tires, so to speak. And we'd want to see LaFerge's response to the skip comments. But I think otherwise it looks like it's ready to be scheduled for a public hearing.
And the way the dates fall now, we're looking at July.
If we decide to have the traffic study reviewed and they can get it back to us by then.
Oh, and it usually may. We're like 6 or 7 weeks out and we'll have it.
Okay, I don't know how the backlog works.
The meeting date would be, July would be the 18th.
I'll make a motion to set the public hearing for July 18th.
We have a 7-on-1 time slot available.
Yes. Okay.
A second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for setting the public hearing. That leads up to discussion on that motion.
Sounds good.
You got your short form in and all that, correct?
Yeah, that was submitted as part of the application.
I have one thing. Anne, would you like to add anything to that motion?
That we would have LaFerge respond the most recent comments on the SIP. And that we obtain a review of the Great Main traffic study.
And those we need for the public hearing. So they would be something, that's why I'm asking for it to be tied in with the public hearing motion. So if we, Jim, you feel that we can do both of those by?
Yes.
That meeting?
Yes.
So the motion to schedule a public hearing.
Because we're in our second round of this WIP review, this is not the first round.
Right, so this is just reviewing their responses. All right, so we have a motion to schedule a public hearing for Moreau Animal Clinic on July 18th. I may not be here. July 18th at 7:01. The motion, we have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Then would we please call the roll on that one, too, please. Now, you know what? That's not controversial. So let's just do ayes and nays. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Hearing no opposition. You have a public hearing at 7:01 on July 18th.
Thank you.
I may or may not be here. So it's going to be kind of moving right along. Up next, we have Sorrell Builders, modification of approved subdivision known as Wood Creek. We have one of those. Yeah.
Well, sealed. You called today, right?
Not good. Don't hear anybody jumping up and saying that to me.
Oh, here he comes.
Oh, okay.
You have a good time.
But I apologize. I was coaching my son's baseball game, and Matt Steves got sick and he didn't come. Good evening.
I'm sorry.
That was a good excuse for those folks.
It looked like a baseball mess on my shoes and everything.
What? We have all that. So it took a minute for me to bang the gavel and move on. So
oh, I appreciate that.
Your time slot is still safe. I had the music somehow. But I wanted to give you a moment. Okay. I mean, a couple of times. See, you moved that to my home. Should be the floor.
Well, you got to explain what you want first.
Okay. My own life right now.
Yep.
You're up. You're actually 3 minutes into your up.
Okay. Are you guys familiar with Sandy Boulevard when you guys come in?
Give us background in minutes.
Okay. Peter Dam Road to Sandy Boulevard. You make a right, we have a boulevard entrance. It's got to be, I don't know, maybe roughly 300 feet in before you see that corner lot. Do you guys see lot 20 there? Okay, that house is actually facing, it's all Sandy Boulevard, but not the boulevard way, the other way. So that property line, the way it is, you see that script, that line? That's kind of the lighter line. That's not a straight line. Diagonal, and then it cuts across those two lots. That's the way the subdivision was, when they subdivided, that's how they did it. So we were able to get this landlocked piece of property from the Maynard family. And I have a copy here signed by the homeowners of Lot 20 to do a lot line adjustment and then have two lots that are already facing Sandy Boulevard.
So the original subdivision was how many lots?
34, which we took one out. Remember those two lots? We
took
those
three. Did that in February, I think.
Yeah.
Made that adjustment. Right. Yeah.
So now it's going to be 35. And these are one-acre lots, which are bigger than the lots that I have, anything over there.
So just, you're creating then, you're adding property. By virtue of doing that, you're adding two more lots to the subdivision.
Correct.
Lots A and B are new.
Correct.
And the existing lot area for the corner lot is now reduced to about 1.46 acres. Is that correct?
You know, I'm sorry, Jim. My copy is small. So it's a big
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, I'm sorry, so it increases.
It increases.
Okay. I mean, from a zoning perspective, these lots are compliant.
It makes no sense.
So I guess my question on it is, you're showing the house on lot A and B.
Correct.
This remaining 1.48, what is that? I don't see a house proposed anywhere.
There was a house already. There is a house
already now. Existing there.
Yeah, there's an existing house.
Where is that?
It's facing like.
So that house is right here, facing that part of the
this
road.
One.
Correct.
As a condition of approval, I would like to see that house indicated.
Yeah, I.
The location of that house.
Okay.
Because I want to make sure that's compliant.
For lot 20?
Yeah, for the existing lot that remains a corner lot, there's a house on it already and it's not showing where it's located.
Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that it still has the right setbacks? And
correct.
Everything. I agree with you on that. Where's the, and things like, where's the septic and the water for that existing house too?
The water goes actually right through it, so does the power. So when I spoke to National Grid,
so it's public water.
Oh yeah,
where's town water? Where's the septic field for this?
There's 1 acre lots. It's gonna be in the backyard. The septic field's gonna be in the backyard of the house.
I would expect that. Talking about the existing home.
The existing home?
I have one.
Oh, it's all the way to the right. The existing home is on over an acre lot.
Yes.
So this house is here. The septic is right here.
Okay.
And then what happens is there's a little ravine here.
Right.
So it's
totally compliant. We need to know where that house is.
Got it. With
the
septic on that lot. Understood. No problem.
I'm not saying it's not where it belongs.
No, I got you. No, I understand. The reason why I asked the question is because obviously I got a CO on it. It's obviously code compliant. It's over an acre lot, and the other two lots are 1 acre lots. So, but yes, I'll give you what you need. You understand why I'm asking the question?
Of course.
Okay.
And you're changing lot lines.
So we have to make sure the new lot lines don't make it non-compliant. That's what we're asking.
But this is, maybe you guys don't understand that. This is his existing lot line. I'm moving it over, giving him more property.
Yes.
So this, okay, this is his existing.
No, I understand.
I'm moving my line over.
I understand completely.
Oh, okay.
But Jim, that's fine.
Anything else, Paul? These two houses front on the boulevard.
Correct.
It's a divided boulevard.
Yes. It's this, the name of the road is Sandy Boulevard. It's a loop road. It's got a boulevard entrance, and it makes a...
But they're on the boulevard part where they're divided down the middle of the...
No. They're right past the boulevard.
Okay. All right. That's all I want to ask.
Gotcha.
If it wasn't, then it might be... I want to know.
No. Right past the boulevard entrance is where these two lots start.
I think what we're going to need, John, is the... you have the Mylar for the entire subdivision, the original. Mm-hmm. We're going to need that modified to reflect this change and then have that re-signed. Should you approve this? That would be my recommendation, so we see the full subdivision.
Should I take the notes on this? Or you
yeah, I think you should.
Okay.
With the original Mylars adjusted for the previous?
Yes. Yep. So now we got to adjust, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, instead of having an adaption staple to it, it'd be nice if that was also shown on. So.
Well, yeah, we can pick this all, you're right, we can pick this all up on one sheet.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Both this change and your prior one on that.
He brought them down to the county already.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to do this a second time.
Okay, just Mylars, and then I can move
Yep. the lot. And then have the signature line put on like we did before. Mm-hmm. The line order was assigned. It's the signature line.
Got it, okay. On the Mylars.
Yes.
Push
map
them up. Okay. No problem.
Okay, board, anything else?
Do you have a vote
on this? Well, it depends on if you can get enough information to make a final approval on it. We've asked them to put some stuff together. As far as changing the plans, but I don't know if any of them are things that we have to see before we even approve. So that'll be up to you guys.
So we can make a motion for approval of a
modified subdivision.
Modified subdivision.
Yes.
With
and the reason why it's here
yeah.
is only the board can change the subdivision that
right.
you approve.
But it'll be conditional approval until I give the rest of the other rest of the information that you need.
Well, yeah, the Mylars.
Yep.
It would be conditional happens.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. So I'll make a motion to approve the modification of the
Wood Creek
subdivision.
Modification.
You know, we modify the Wood Creek subdivision site plan for the attached drawing with the request that the applicant mark up the new Mylars to show the house position, septic, things that were discussed.
So the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion on the table? Hearing none, do we call the roll on that one?
Eric Bergman?
Yes.
Adam Siebel?
Yes.
Ann Perdue?
Yes.
Mike Shaver?
Yes.
Meredith Matias?
Yes.
John Arnold?
Yes. Motion is approved. Is there anything else we might like to do for this applicant?
We'll do the Mylar.
Okay.
We'll do the Mylar. Make a motion to chairman one of the member of the board sign a modified Mylar plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion by Eric and a second by Meredith to ask the chairman and one other board member to sign the Mylar to present it to the planning department. It seems terribly controversial. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. And no nays. That motion passes.
Okay, thank you, and I apologize for being late.
Okay, you don't want to argue any of that with us?
No.
Okay. Want to be sure. So, make sure those things are, before you print the Mylars, make sure Jim gives you this and you know what's going on.
Yes, I will do that.
And then tomorrow morning, you'd like to see it.
Yes, we have it.
Sir.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Good evening. Up next on our agenda for this evening is, then we can say this one. Stinky's Coffee Company, Great Fun LLC. It just gets, I mean, it starts out with Stinky's Coffee, and then it goes right to Great Fun.
Right.
I mean, it just keeps getting better. So, tell us the story. What do you got?
I am proposing to move my coffee production over to my grandmother's garage. Her property is commercial and residentially zoned. From there, I want to roast and then set up online, sell coffee online, do like farmers markets and stuff like that, eventually down the road, moving to a coffee shop setting. This site wouldn't have any retail front at all, so nobody from the public. You know, you're looking at the one and only employee that I would have, you know, working at that place. Really, it's not a lot to it. You know, it's just a coffee roaster about this big. Goes on, you know, a table, vents it through the wall. Propane power. Yes. Whatever question you guys have, you know.
Why is this not a commercial business? It's not, I mean, it's not his primary residence, but
correct.
I was wondering that.
Why is all that?
It's not a home occupation, which would require a CPA.
Yeah, I saw this as a standalone business operating out of the garage, the existing garage. So I brought it for site plan review. I just thought of a standalone business. Admittedly, it does not get any simpler than this. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it's a new business.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that maybe in this zoning rewrite, home occupation gets clarified as the user's home versus a relative versus a stranger. This is not clarified, just what a home occupation is about.
Well, I'm going to actually split them into two classes. So we have a basic home occupation and something that would be a little more perhaps sophisticated, but this would be in the more basic category.
Yeah, for sure.
But.
And I don't want to think he's here now, exactly.
It's a new business in the C1 district, so that's why it was deemed for site plan review. But he, as Ryan, when I met with him a couple times, there's no employees, there's no retail. It's me himself out there roasting the coffee beans and then he is going to personally take his own car and deliver them to, you know, the buyer or a farmer's market or whatever the case may be, but there's no, the only traffic would be the occasional, your beans are delivered there.
Yeah, standard UPS truck, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Are you bringing water to the garage?
Yeah, from the house.
Okay.
Yeah.
The house is still a residence.
Yeah.
It's going to continue to be his grandmother's residence.
So as much as it sounds really simple, how is this not a dual use, not a commercial lot?
Well, actually, he's the compliance. The residence is not.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And that's pre-existing non-conforming and allowed to continue.
And I'm not trying to make this more complicated.
But there's nothing in such a can't have two uses in a lot.
Right, right.
We have many of them in our commercial district.
Right, so you mentioned occasional UPS, FedEx, that type of delivery. How occasional is that?
I mean, really, basically, whenever I need to order more beans. So, you know, I'd probably be ordering, you know, like a 100 pounds at a time, so that'll last, like, that should last about a month or so.
So less often than the Amazon Prime order.
Yeah.
I'm asking because UPS has a new policy of they don't want their drivers pulling off the road. All right, and Fortsville Road has now become a really interesting thing where you're pulling along at the speed limit or slightly above if necessary, okay? And you come around a corner, here's a UPS truck or a FedEx truck parked right in the travel lane.
Right.
They don't even pull off to the shoulder because they don't want to risk being responsible for somebody coming around, and it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Okay.
And you're up near the end where the intersection is.
Right.
Right? You're just... I would say west of what used to be Nick's Fence.
Yep, right next to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my question is if it does become a problem, would you be okay with putting some kind of a pull-off there?
Yeah, I mean, we have actually already have like a open light spot where we, you know, park our other cars, so they can easily pull in or back in.
So I guess my request would be this. It's not going to have to show up on your plans, but it would be nice if you could ask the driver to please just pull over as much as you can.
Yeah.
There in particular, because what's going to happen is they're going to be parked on your side of the road.
Yeah.
Across the street, it's Diamond 9. Well, I don't know what they call it.
Diamond 9.
It's called Diamond 9. Anyways, across the street is that, and then just west of there is the nice blind corner. People coming off Route 9 are going to whip around.
Yeah.
And it could get dicey there. So if you could possibly ask them to pull off the road there.
Another alternative, too, like I can always have things delivered to my house, too. It's like, that's also...
Well, I'm not saying, once a month, it's not a big deal anyways. I'm just saying that if you wouldn't mind asking them to clean it. Like at our house, they were parking out on the road, and it's like, dude, you've got 300 feet of driveway, a big area to turn around, come in and turn around. Right? And you do that most of the drivers that aren't new. So if they can pull off and pull back out without having to back out on the fork of the road, that would be great.
I think as far as a lot of my deliveries, you know, of, you know, like my shipments out, it's probably going to be me bringing it to, like, the UPS store or, like, to a Dropbox rather than signing up to get, like, a pickup, you know.
Is there going to be a bathroom in the garage?
No, I'm just going to use the inside of the house for
drains in the garage floor.
Drains?
Yeah.
No, not currently. No.
The reason I ask that is you're running a roaster. I don't know anything about commercial roasters. All right, but I'm assuming you have to wash them.
Yes.
So you'll be washing the roaster out, and I'm assuming the wash water is going to go somewhere. You mentioned that you're not going to have a bathroom then.
Right. So we're gonna. I'm going to run water. I'm going to have run water, you know, from the house to the garage,
right,
and then drain it, you know, properly. As far as like washing the roaster, you don't really apply that much water to it because it's like just wiping it down gently, basically.
Ryan, do you need to get health department approval for your operation?
Yes.
So it's food preparation?
It's Department of Agriculture, I believe. Yeah.
And you're currently operating somewhere under that permit?
No, right now I'm just roasting for myself.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't... This is brand new. This is like... You know, I don't have, like, a business quite yet, you know. I have my LLC and everything, but this is just to get me started. So.
Your point is not adding markets.
What's that?
I don't think it's adding markets. I think it's New York State Department of Health.
Okay.
That have to do an inspection for a commercial kitchen, but I could be wrong. They overlap in certain areas, so.
Yeah, if you sell at the farmer's market, I think you might have a different process. I don't know how that happens.
Well, I know for selling baked goods at a farmer's market,
you have
to have your kitchen commercially or kitchen inspected by the health department.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know what coffee roasting falls under as far as.
Yeah.
I was just going to say there's a coffee guy. That's
all. Yeah. Oh, and this is a type 2 action under secret 2, by the way.
Anything else? It is a commercial business. It's a new activity on a commercial lot in our commercial zone. I just put that out there, but I will ask the board, what would you like to do with this applicant at this time?
Seems kind of a dime when we always have public hearings.
I'm leaving it up to you. I agree with you.
It's a new use.
It seems
a lot, even up to me.
Yeah, it cries out like if we could skip the public hearing, I'd be okay with that. But I don't feel like making exceptions.
I don't think it would hurt town. And maybe no one shows up. But then you're clear with your neighbors at the same time, which is probably good for your business and your grandmother at the same time.
Okay, so we hope to
simple vote.
Yeah. Make a motion on that. We should probably ask you, do you want to continue forward?
Okay.
Yeah. There we go. So
we have a huge rush or one more month.
One delivery of coffee.
That's right. I mean, if it was a school schedule, sure. Well, I mean, if it's, yeah.
I'll make a motion that we schedule a public hearing for.
We might be able to make the June meeting because there's no outstanding issues.
Outstanding that I can.
We can file this right away tomorrow and get it on for the June 20th meeting.
Yeah, I mean, that way we check all the boxes and it's quick. Yeah. All right, I make a motion that we schedule a public hearing for Stickney's Coffee Company on June 20th.
Yep, 701 available for that meeting as well.
Don't we have
McKenna? Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm going to say we got it.
705.
705 times
5. If McKenna doesn't show up, we only have to wait for him.
Yeah.
We can be late. We're not allowed to be early on. Just so you understand, we have a policy of holding public hearings for all change of uses or new businesses in our commercial zone. And as much as you're seeing really small, it still is something we can't do. So, I have a motion. We have a second.
I'll second.
I do have a second now. Motion by Eric, second by Ann. Is there any discussion on it? Hearing them, it's not too controversial, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Hearing no opposition, and you are scheduled for a public hearing. Nick, well, you didn't think when you came here tonight you were going to get a public hearing, did you?
No.
Yeah. 300 people show up all through the coffee, right? Okay. So that will be June 20th at 7:05.
All right, I'll bring coffee.
No, that's subdivisions only.
Oh, okay.
No. We do the ones for the
okay. We have to do no petition. So, but
all you need to do is show up on this one. I'll be here.
All right, so that exhausts the agenda. Other than we wanted to discuss the scope of work for possible outside contractors.
Was it biocharcoal? Yeah, I just got a text from Carla. She's on her way from Schuylerville. That was all 5 minutes ago, so she's in the room.
So, would you, Jim, would you like to just explain what that is? I'm going to just say.
Okay, so at the last meeting, we had on this particular project, we had the public hearing. It was opened and closed, and then there was a discussion relating to the status of the seeker assessment that had been done, the neg deck that was reached, and it was confirmed
that it was a negative declaration. It was not a conditioned negative declaration. It was a negative declaration. That was clarified. But then a discussion ensued about potentially rescinding that and reopening SECR, the SECR assessment, and that discussion went on for a period of time, got into a lot of details and so on and so forth, and the outcome of that was a motion to rescind it, and that motion failed. So subsequent discussion then continued about where to move on from that, and I'm maybe paraphrasing here, summarizing, certainly anybody can jump in if they have additional things to add. But basically speaking, under the site plan review, though, that is still open and ongoing, there were some issues that could be handled through the site plan review process that is still ongoing. And so on that basis, it was decided to request from board members any topics, issues, concerns, items that you wanted to see discussed further, and also have a third-party review consultant take up those issues from a subjective point of view, so to speak, and review the information that has been submitted by the applicant and review that against relevant regulations, potential impacts to the local community, to the neighbors, all those points of view, and have that third-party consultant on behalf of the town review that information and make sure that we did have actual accurate information going forward, to make sure that there was no open-ended issues, there was no cause for concern. So on that basis, we asked for the board members to provide their comments by, I think it was Friday before Memorial Day. That date was May 27th, Friday, May 27th, that we had met, I believe it was on the 12th, that we had our special meeting, the special public hearing. And so there was a considerable amount of time, about 2 weeks, for people to, or board members to get any list together that they wanted for concerns. We received one set of concerns from Ann, and they were quite detailed, and she even put it in a scope of services format for me. So she did some of my work.
I know how to do it.
So it's almost in a ready-to-go form. In terms of its format and its structure. And then I think it was John who pointed out that he thought it would be a good idea, though, for the board to collectively discuss this rather than just take all the concerns, you know, verbatim and then put them back out there. He thought it would be good for you as a board to review the comments that we received and then agree upon as a board which things were worthy of further consideration by the third-party consultant and what were not. So when I got the list, and it was via email, this occurred. I got the one list was the one that was submitted to me, and I was then instructed at that point by the council, by the way, Carla is on her way to repeat that. She's en route. She said to make sure that we also share any comments that were received with the applicant. So that was done as well. So we had Ann's list, and then I did send it off to the applicant. They subsequently, I can't recall the specific date, but I think it was one day last week, wrote back with some responses from their point of view as to the need to review these things going forward. And that's basically where we stand. We have Ann's list and then some comments from the applicant in response, and now it's here before you as a board to decide which one of these comments you think are worthy of having that review done. And just for clarification and the benefit of the public here,
how we approach these things with a third-party review. We do this all the time. You've heard reference made to the earlier applicant with the traffic, for example. We do enter into a third-party consultant arrangement where they do the review on behalf of the town. They're not affiliated with the applicant in any way, and we do get that subjective review. That is paid for by establishment of an escrow account that is funded 100% from the applicant. So, and it's at no cost to the town or no cost to the building department or anything like that. In doing so, though, we do need mutual agreement and consent from the applicant because they are, in fact, funding the review that's done. Although they don't have any say over it, the third-party consultant is completely isolated, separate, apart, able to do their own work. Nobody bothers them. They're given the scope, and they do their thing, and they report back. But it is funded by the applicant, so on that basis, they do have a say in mutually agreeing upon the scope of work that is done. So that's a brief summary. Maybe not that brief.
I think it's a fairly comprehensive narrative with the exception of that. I don't think we've had a specific discussion about the independent detail, whether it was site plan specific or touched upon seeker related issues. It was simply an independent.
Well, I know that's true, Anne, but the idea of reopening seeker was discussed
but it was not discussed in the context of independent review.
I didn't think it was. That was the whole point of it. We wanted that opportunity.
That's not the way I understood it. We may make a distinction without a meaning here, but that's not what my understanding was. And maybe the rest of
it. But I think going forward, if whatever there are topics of concern, they will be reviewed.
Right.
So I mean, that's the main goal here, and the fact that it's maybe not under the guidance of seeker is you're still going to get the review. You're still going to get the information reviewed. If that's what the intent is, that will be done.
Yeah, I think that the way I structured this particular scope of work is not as an environmental impact statement, but it rather is an audit or a review of what we have seen and what our findings have been and whether or not they are.
And as a result, the outcome of the meeting on May 12th, the implication was that going forward it's going to be under the guidance of site plan review.
I didn't get that. I don't know if the other press board members can speak to that. They also voted for an independent review. I did not see that limitation in our resolution.
I remember it distinctly, but.
Okay. Not mine. But I don't think, in any event, the scope that I am proposing is inconsistent with discussions we had last meeting. But again, I asked for the other board members to weigh in, tell us what their thoughts are. I think we've had an enormous amount of material to look at, and we've gotten more material since the last seeker determination, which is fairly extensive. I don't know if the board members themselves have had the opportunity to go through, hundreds of pages in the permit applications. It's pretty weighty stuff. And it's not necessarily the kind of thing that anyone finds easy to grasp, but particularly without the assistance of a qualified expert who might say, yes, you need to worry about this, or no, you don't need to worry about this.
So I was kind of hoping Carl would be here because I had a question.
Well, if you want to, maybe just we can.
Well, no, I'm going to address it to you, and you can defer to counsel.
Well, she's going to be here momentarily. Okay. But go ahead.
Well, I have a question that's kind of a general question before we get into the specifics of the scope of work. Okay. It's been my understanding for a number of years here that when we do a seeker, and when we do a site plan, that it's somewhat of a contract. Basically, the engineers and the applicant provide us with their information. We usually ask for outside review of certain things just to make sure that everything goes as best we can. However, if an applicant tells us that they don't foresee a problem because they're going to do A, B, and C, it's always been my belief that if they don't do that, okay, a great example to me is there's a wood chipper in this project. Okay, I've seen the sound engineer that's come out. Okay, that engineering, if we approve this, doesn't change the fact that we have rules of certain decibels that are allowed to be the limit for the, the boundaries of that particular property, not even the industrial park itself. So it would seem to me if the applicant says we're going to be within those decibel limits and we approve it based on that, and then they turn around and they're not within it, they need to get within it. Because the site plan and the seeker say they said they would do this. Another example is the applicant has stated that the trucks that are going to be rolling in with treated municipal waste are going to be sealed. Okay? Has made it clear on numerous occasions that there'll be no extensive odors coming from this site. I know there's concern within the community, and I don't blame them, that this thing's going to stink. As far as I'm concerned, we have their contract that says it won't. They have scrubbers, they have negative ventilation, that kind of thing. If 2 months down the road, we find that Moreau now smells like a sewage treatment facility because they haven't met their requirements, it seems to me that they need to. Or they have $1 million concrete building that they're not going to be using until they do. I mean, that's the way I understand it. So that's why I'm struggling with the idea that we have to look into. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with some of the things that have been requested to be reviewed, I think fall under DEC review. Okay, and you can say what you want about whether you trust DEC or like them or not. I can say that as much as I'm not a big government guy, I do know that agencies are there for a reason. Do they make mistakes? Yes. But they have a review process too. I don't know if DEC has a public hearing process for... well, DEC said maybe. All right.
I heard that.
Okay, well, no, I didn't talk to him personally about it, but the meeting that we were in, I asked if there was a public hearing thing, and they said, in some cases, yes. And I don't know if there's something we can do to say, hey, in this case, I think you need to. We have public concern about this, all right, and you're the ones that are going to be regulating that aspect, okay? But going back to, like, the noises and the smells, I mean, if we're saying that we don't trust the applicant and what they're saying, I can see that. Okay, we can say that about pretty much every applicant that comes in front of us, every subdivision, every business in our commercial zone. We could start questioning every detail of it, but I think we've always said, okay, well, this is what you've agreed to, this is what it's going to be. Now, then it takes that extra step to compliance, right?
Well, there's something I'd like to add. I think it's relevant. After the last meeting, I get planning journals all the time, you know, that speak to novel or innovative approaches to review on occasion, that kind of thing, all sorts of things. Well, I read an article a few years ago about a policy that was invoked by a planning board or an applicant, and it was referred to as a good neighbor policy. And what the board did as a condition of their approval is they set forth, with mutual agreement of the applicant, a good neighbor policy that required regular, active outreach to the community and the neighbors post-approval that allowed direct face-to-face dialogue between the neighbors and the business and how things go. Are you honoring your commitments for noise and odor and things like that? So, you know, in hearing the discussion of the other night, in May, May, when we had the public hearing, I got to thinking to myself, this could be, a relevant, element to
to this particular review. So I called the applicant and I asked if they would consider setting forth a good neighborhood policy for the board to consider. And I know our submission date is yesterday, I think it was. And I do see, I haven't even got time, or no, it was today.
Yeah.
It was today. It was today. I saw that it came in, and they did submit a good neighborhood policy. I don't know what the elements of it are. I haven't had time to review it. It just came in today. But the point being is, what the elements of a good neighbor policy in this instance might be is that on a regular basis, quarterly, semi-annually, or it could be paced with very early on, it happens more frequently than after a couple of years, maybe it can shift to semi-annually or annually. But direct dialogue between the applicant and the neighbors, invite them into the plant, see how things are operating. Is it in fact, you know, operating as said during the site plan review? Are the trucks sealed? Is there in fact no odor? Is there in fact non-offensive noise at the property line? All those kind of things. And if there's not, then there's opportunity to talk about that. And it's not just, the applicant goes away and gets their approval and you never have to hear from anybody. And if they don't honor the policy, then they risk having their approval rescinded.
Hey, John, if I may. This is first of its kind facility.
Can I just get Carl up to speed? We'll go to my question first. So, Carl, the question I asked was, it's been my understanding from this board in the past that when we pass a site plan, or when we approved or named after seeker, that was somewhat of a contract with the applicant, that the information that they provided and things that they stated as fact were fact. And it has always been my belief that if in the future it turned out that that wasn't the case, that that was an actionable contract. I'm just asking for my own personal information, is that accurate or is that kind of a little dumb farmer's?
Well, first, it's not dumb farmerish.
Okay.
Second, I apologize for being late. I don't know if Jim told you my
yeah.
son had a concert, so.
Yeah. That's why you let me go first because I'm long winded to take you.
Okay. it's not a contract per se, but they have an approval, and they have conditions. Sometimes there's conditions on the approval, and in the event that they don't meet their conditions, then they're in violation of their approval, and then they could be revoked. So what you're saying, though, I mean, if they have an approval and they've met the conditions on the approval and they built it 20 years from now, it would be a code enforcement. It wouldn't be a let's come back to you. It would be let's go to code enforcement and see what's happening while you're in violation.
But it would still be action. And the example I gave was they got a wood chip run, sir. And we've seen the sound decibel level engineering and all, and it all looks good and everything. But if they fired that wood chipper up, and I'm sure that you won't want to do this, but if they fire this wood chipper up and you can hear it, you know, off site, really loud, and it's above the decibel levels of requirements, if they said they wouldn't be above, then we have a purview to use code enforcement to go in and say, yeah, you can't do that.
To use code enforcement,
right.
Correct.
Now, it doesn't rescind their site plan, but it would require, in order to run that chipper, they have to make some kind of adaption to bring it within code.
They would have to, and then if there was some reason they can't, they would come before you for a modification.
Okay, and the same thing as in Seeker, I don't believe in Seeker we found that they had a large impact for odor. Okay, but the potential exists, considering the material they're using for seed stock. So if it turns out that the trucks that are hauling over Fort Edward Road aren't sealed as well, hermetically sealed as well as you would like, okay, and the neighborhood smells like a municipal sewage center because of it, that if somebody wants, they can start a complaint, it can go through code enforcement, and we would have a thing that says, yeah, you said you're in Seeker that this was not going to be the case. Is that
not as much.
Okay.
Seeker is Seeker. Seeker is what the project will do and what they can tell you about their at right now, what they can tell you is going to happen. And you look at the plan,
right.
And you base everything on the plan,
and you say, okay, based on the plan, we determine, as you did, that there was no significant environmental impact. It would really just be a code enforcement. It wouldn't be a, hey, and seeker, 30 years ago, you said X, now it's Y, so now you're in violation of seeker. It doesn't work.
But it's still an enforceable action. Code enforcement officer can ask for compliance. If compliance doesn't occur, it can be taken to court.
If it violates the code, if it just violates what you think is on the seeker form, that's different. But if it, that's not actionable. If you violate the code, like the noise is a code, or, you know, if it's a code, that's
odor is not. Odor is not.
But that would be a DEC question. So you could go to the DEC and say, hey, they said X on their, you know, their air pollution permit. Can you look into their air pollution permit? And DEC would then investigate that. That would be the task.
And these are all very time.
I'm sorry. And that, I know this is emotional for everybody. This isn't a public hearing. It's a moment.
I understand.
And so that's what I said, that I had read about a form of approval that's been used in other planning boards. I read about Planning Magazine.
We talked about that.
The good narrow policy. Right. That did, in fact, get submitted today. I don't know the content of it, but the point being is, if that is part of the approval, then that policy is invoked and it has to be followed. And it creates opportunity for direct dialogue between the operator and the neighbors. And if it's not operating as promised, or if it's operating in a manner that's offensive to the neighbors, that's an opportunity for direct dialogue to have it made.
It's direct dialogue, it's not action. Like, they can talk about it, and that's, and they can talk about it, but that's, the condition was that they would have a policy. They have a policy. Just like the condition is, for example, you're connected to municipal sewer. Once you're connected to municipal sewer, that condition's met, and it's not actionable.
But the point being is I think it's extremely proactive and useful measure to have to require dialogue between the neighbors and the applicant post approval.
I don't disagree.
Can I please speak?
Yes, you may not.
I just we were waiting for you, and I'm sorry.
I apologize. I was late. Not your kid.
Anyway, as I was saying, this is a project first of its kind by a company that has never built a facility like it or any other solid waste facility. It is, by its own admission, bringing 15% of the biosolids generated in this state to this facility for processing. And it acknowledges that there are PFAs, dioxins, and heavy metals in these biosolids. And we know that there's a potential, just a potential, that their process will destroy the PFAS. But there is still a lot of study to be done. EPA has said so. And they continue to study, and they don't know what the consequences are of the output. Even if you do happen to destroy the PFAS, what do they turn into? Do they turn into something that is just as bad or difficult to get rid of? So I think when you have a facility of this magnitude, potential harmful exposure to our community, it makes sense to bring somebody on who's independent and can give us guidance on which of these issues we should focus on. And we decided we would do that back in December, passed a motion unanimously. I never saw the DEC one-hour teleconference as being a substitute for that independent advice. In the meantime, the application has changed. The air permit application has been revised, updated, more narrative, and so on. We're not working lockstep with the DEC. They're going to issue a permit that allows this facility to issue or emit nitrogen dioxide and carbon dioxide and other things up to the limits of what is a major source of pollution. And I've seen no indication, and maybe it's buried somewhere here, about what the mean deviation is of their projected emissions. We have no idea what's actually going to be coming out of this project. And we're bringing 15% of the state's biosolids to the community of Monroe. I don't think we are even responsible for 1% of the biosolids in the state.
I'm going to ask you, where is your source for that 15% of all of New York State biosolids?
Biochar's website.
Pardon?
Biochar's website.
Applauding the fact that I didn't know that right off the top of my head. Believe it or not, I'm not an engineer, okay? And I'm not a paid full-time staff member here. So I asked a question because I have never heard that. It seems to me a little illogical that a facility of this size is going to be bringing in 15% of the biosolids generated by the state of New York. There are 8 million people in New York City alone. That are producing biosolids, right?
What's on the website is not submitted to the town. I can find anything, so just
okay.
Their website.
That's why I asked the question.
I didn't submit that.
It seemed a
little. Well, they did actually. They did. They sent us a link.
Okay.
So they're lying to
me.
Okay. For starters, I once again remind the public: this is not a public hearing. Okay, you're welcome to be here. We're glad you came. Okay?
You represent us. You represent us.
For the record, I represent the planning department of the town of Monroe.
Which is us. Thank you very much.
No, actually, you need to address the board for that. They appoint us. Okay?
But
we're doing a job here, and we're trying really hard to do it, and we're doing it for you guys, sure, for the town. We aren't all, like, sitting here 24 hours a day working in this building, okay? So as much as I've taken a lot of information on this project, I didn't see that one, and it still seems a really big number to me. 15% of all of New York State's biosolids.
That seems really large.
Okay. So.
Tom, there's a lot of material. I don't begrudge the board members
so
not having.
My question that I asked earlier was not as an opposition to your request for outside guidance. My question was, as I'm trying to figure out, to me, even if we have an outside consultant come in and look at this, what if that outside consultant says, yeah, judging by the numbers they're showing me here, yeah, this is all good. All right, I still want to know that if it turns out a year from now or 2 years from now that something they propose isn't good, that we have some kind of actionable thing beyond DEC doing a test.
I don't see how we would be able to manage that beyond DEC.
But if that's the case, then I don't know how we do it with any project. And I'm trying to find a way, because as a planning board, we're not allowed to do certain things, okay, without having some basis of merit. And I understand your request for further engineering study. I think that's a good request. But before we went into details of scope, I wanted to know what our outcome was on it. What is our goal of doing it? Okay? I was going to ask Jim to read your scope request so that we could get information of what area you wanted to go into. But I brought up certain areas. One of them is the noise from the chicken. It seems to me, and once again, I'm apparently not too bright. Thank you. All right. It seems to me that if they tell us the chipper meets sound ordinance and it doesn't, we have an actionable offense that the zoning or code enforcement officer can take charge of, an action on that. Okay?
Yes.
I don't know if we have any emittance from the staff. Once that's under DEC permit, that's DEC's purview.
That's right.
Okay? That was the way I understood it. When we had our one-hour meeting with them, the Zoom meeting, I was a little uncomfortable with some of their comments on testing. All right, yeah, we're going to do a test this year, and then, you know, unless there's a problem, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I don't always trust DEC. I think we live in an area where we can be comfortable being skeptical of DEC's oversight all the time. I don't trust DEC to necessarily be thinking what's in the best interest of specifically Monroe. All right. I think they'll look at it as an overall state. They may even look at it as overall global climate change, whatever. You know, they may look at it that way. That doesn't necessarily help us, right?
I get that. I don't distrust them, by the way. They're doing their job, and that is to provide by the New York State regulations.
Well, I shouldn't say I don't trust them. What I'm saying is I don't know that I trust them to look out for just site-specific.
Right? I do not trust them.
They have to look out for the whole state. I get that. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a grip before we go agreeing on the scope of work is where is our position on this and what is our action, what we can do. Okay? And as you know, we're not allowed to make arbitrary and capricious decisions. We have to make them based on facts and within the purview of what we're allowed to look over. We're a planning board. We're not an environmental quality review.
But in effect, we are frequency enforcement. Well, and...
Okay. So, anyways, with that said, would you be willing to share with us
sure.
what...
Sure. I mean, where do you... Do you want me to start with the general and the background, or just get right into the scope?
Oh, God.
Just the scope?
Yeah, just the scope.
Okay. All right. Scope of work. The planning... This is from the email I submitted by Amy. The planning board wishes to retain a qualified independent consultant to assist it in the review of potential environmental impacts on the facility as follows. One, conduct a review of the following documents. A, part one of the EAF as updated by SBS, a copy of which is attached to the RFP as attachment one. B, the air emissions permit and solid waste permit applications most recent to be provided by SBS, attached to this RFP as attachments 2 and 3. C, facility site plan, approval set documents, dated March blank 2022, or most recent, proposed by SBS. D, the water capacity engineering report dated March blank 2022, and the wastewater capacity engineering report dated March blank 2022. And E, the generic EIS from 1991 for the Morrow Industrial Park. That was item one. All right.
And the part one of the EAF, by the way, Jim, I would ask to be updated because it did not disclose a number of things like the nitrogen dioxide. And maybe that would like to look at the EAF again to ensure that, given its current application process and information, that the EAF remains accurate.
Can I? I just want to make sure, and this is where we always get kind of mired in. Seeker's done. There was a determination. There was a motion at the last meeting. I think Andy made it to reopen Seeker. It was denied. So changing the EAF right now, you can't do that. Seeker's done. So what you're looking for is what independent engineering consultants can help you for site plan issues, not for Seeker issues.
If the EAF is inaccurate when we acted upon it, what does that mean about our assessment?
It was not inaccurate when you enacted upon it. And I'll ask Biochar if they want to address that. But what you're saying, Seeker is done. And I understand the desire to perhaps reopen it, and actually reviewing this does look like there's an EIS request. But I want the board to understand that what you're trying to do is get an independent review on your site plan issues, not your Seeker issues.
I'm trying to get an independent review of the environmental assessment. And it's not an EIS. I'm not calling it that. I'm not putting it up for a public hearing. I'm asking for an independent expert to say we did what we had to do. Our findings are credible.
So you're asking for an independent engineering firm to review a planning board's determination on Seeker?
Look at the documents that we did and give us advice as to whether or not we were appropriately assessing the nature of the impacts.
So yes?
Yes.
We can't ask an engineering firm to review a full Seeker document to ascertain whether the planning board's determination is done. That's done through an Article 78. Once final determination is done.
We don't have to do an Article 78. We have the capacity to hire independent experts to assist us in doing this project.
I don't disagree, Anne. You absolutely have the right to hire independent experts and the applicant pays for that. But we're at the site plan portion. You don't have anything open before you under Seeker.
I think we do.
Well, we'll agree to disagree, but as the attorney for the planning board, I'm advising you don't.
No,
I don't think we have anything open to see. What I'm wondering is if what you're looking for is for them to look over some of the environmental claims made by the site plan, okay? And that may cause us to reconsider. If
the site plan doesn't reference information and permits that we depended on when we did the secret assessment.
Jim, can you reread the last line from that one, please?
The one I just read?
Yes, please.
Okay. Conduct a review of the following documents. Part 1 of the EAF as dated or as updated by SDS, a copy of which is attached to this article.
Just the last line from that, if you would, just for me, unless everybody else
wants to the generic EIS from 1991 for the Merle Industrial Park.
So you want to have an engineer look at our generic EIS. Do you think, is it because you feel something's changed on the site?
Years old.
So maybe they did look at things that we look at now? So
yes. Okay. Maybe things have changed in the past 30 years that we can't rely on. Plus there was the wastewater capacity and water capacity threshold on a per acreage basis. And the GEIS says, if you exceed them, an independent study of some kind is warranted. And they have exceeded those thresholds by many times. So that's just an example.
What would that independent study be looking at for the water and the sewer?
Pardon me? Oh, the study would be, are you jumping ahead?
No, you mentioned just now the environmental review that was done for the industrial park said that if they exceeded a certain amount that there would be an independent study.
I need some help with that. I'm not a water engineer either.
What would they be looking at? I'm just curious.
Just the independent expert looking at the GEIS?
As far as water and sewer goes.
I don't know. I think it might be a question of the viability of the infrastructure.
Like infrastructure capacity?
Yeah, and what it would mean for future development.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you for reading.
Okay, so that's item one is really a document review. Of items listed through A through E. All right. 2, based upon the foregoing review, evaluate and make a tentative assessment of the potential impact of the facility in accordance with the framework of Part 2 of the EAF, including A, the nature of adverse impacts underlying the findings of negative impacts such as effects on air quality, health and safety of the community, transportation, odor, noise, water, and wastewater capacity, the consequences of the presence of PFAS, dioxins and metals, and the biosolids that are processed by the facility, i.e. impact the air emissions and wastewater discharge. Item 8, the risk associated with the operations of the facility, such as the storage of biochar, sulfuric acid, liquid nitrogen, and unauthorized waste on the site. And 9, any other matters, whether or not specifically called out by the EAF, but that are appropriately considered in connection with this facility, such as property values and implications for future development of the park and the community. That's item 2. And that's item 2A, I should say. And then item 2B. The magnitude, none, small, moderate, or large, of those negative impacts that the consultant identifies. C, whether and how the New York State DEC permits mitigate any of the identified negative impacts. D, whether and how the GIS addresses those impacts. And E, the adequacy of the means or methods proposed by SDS, as well as others that are available, it should be implemented to mitigate those impacts, including reporting, monitoring, and testing of biosolids brought to the facility, reporting, monitoring, and testing of air emissions and wastewater, monitoring and control of odor, and reporting, monitoring of compliance with other federal, state, and local requirements, and the adequacy of proposed emergency response plans, and the adequacy of proposed training plans. That's all item 2, and that's A through E. Number three, with regard to the...
Do we want them to deal with each individually or read the whole thing? John, I don't know how you want to handle it.
I was going to ask to hear the whole thing as a complete package first.
Okay. All right. Three, with regard to compliance with Article 92 of the Town Code, assess the data provided and determine whether the feedstock to be transported to the facility constitutes a prohibited waste within the meaning of the Town Code, Article 92. And B, provide guidance as to whether the town needs to implement practices to ensure the feedstock does not constitute prohibited waste if the facility becomes operational. Four, with regard to the 1991 GEIS, provide guidance as to whether the town and planning board can rely upon its findings with respect to transportation and other impacts and forego more current assessments of impacts of the facility. And B, whether the GEIS warrants other studies or assessments as a consequence of potential impacts on the facility. Five, prepare a written report regarding the consultant's findings and meet with the planning board to discuss those findings and next steps, if any, including any follow-up assessments or studies that the consultant recommends. And then it goes on to speak to the qualifications of the consultant team, project approach, and time frame to complete the work. That's it.
Okay, board. You've heard the entirety of it. Is there any particular part of it that you want to hear again? Or is there any discussion on the input at this point? I'll say from my standpoint, I'm still struggling trying to wrap my head around this one idea. Article 92 is the town law that says you can't import hazardous waste into the town. Okay? I would think the applicant would really want to look into that, because it would seem to me that if the material was deemed to be a hazardous waste and that law stands, then you're building a facility that can't import what you need for feedstock.
As of right now, it is not hazardous waste as defined under by the EPA and by DEC, which is what the town code provides by.
Okay. And if that were to change, then our Article 92 still stands. That is a home rule thing. If for some reason in the future the material they're inputting does become a hazardous waste under that definition,
correct. And
the town can take action and say, yeah, that can't come in because you have this law that says no.
Yes and no. There might be a vested rights question at that point. But at this point, for you today, that's what you have to look at, what's before you today, that the importing of the biosolids would not be, for the municipal, I'm a study, would not violate Chapter 92. I did look into that as well, based on what was brought up at the last meeting.
So that one I bring up because I don't think that's something an outside consultant, you'd almost have to have an outside lawyer look at that, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not really an engineer or environmental engineer.
It's in part engineering. In the sense that some of these hazardous materials are defined by the percentage of metals, you know, from arsenic and the like that are in there. But I think there is, as Carla points out, and I'll add that later, that domestic waste that is exempted from the prohibited waste definition, which frankly is very unfortunate because of all the things that you would think you would want to prohibit importing from outside of the town. Not just cars, but sewage or biofuel solids. But that's something I think that stems right to EPA.
So with that, though, is that still a concern? Because if it is a violation, if it is not a violation of federal law, state law, and town law,
EPA does not.
I think if you can give the board or an opinion to that effect, it would be fine.
If what? I can give, I just gave, if you want a written opinion, yeah. I'm happy to do so.
EPA is on record as not taking a position.
Okay.
That's not a public opinion.
I'm just telling you that's a fact.
There are no comments.
Okay, so. I'm not sure that the silence from the board is a sign of total agreement or not. I don't know. As a chairman, I'm looking for some kind of input.
I understand the wastewater and water comments, and a lot has been flying around from the city of Glens Falls. That obviously would be the 1991 GRS, but they said they have the capacity, they said they can take it, they said they, and it's a financial, Moreau has to buy more capacity. It's not a pipe size, it's not a...
You also have the email from Mike Bloom, correct?
And if Biochar and the city wants to profile what is this wastewater, that can happen too. So I don't know where we would get if we had a third party review this stuff. What are they going to do? Sue the city of Glens Falls because they said they have the capacity?
We're already in litigation.
Yeah, so I don't know where this is going to get us because if they're saying, and their engineers are saying, who's the Moreau Planning Board to say they're. I don't know what is the end result of this.
And you do have the water superintendent's email today where he indicated that there was capacity.
Yeah.
I think, though, that he indicated that the wastewater system is currently undergoing a review for long-term planning purposes.
And which is a good thing.
Which is a very good thing. But I don't know that they have not taken into account that 16% of the capacity that exists is going to be taken by this project.
He did say they have the capacity, though.
They have the capacity, but he could not say what the future impact would be.
Right, but again, right now, they have the capacity, and there is...
A planning board's job, I think, is to look forward, and 16% of existing capacity is a lot.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think we got the letter from the water and sewer superintendent, and there is room to buy more. The pipe size and everything's there. I see no reason to go any further with that review for the water and sewer. That part, I think, is good.
See, I'm still stuck on the fact that the only thing I see is a concern for water and sewer. As far as capacity goes, there's infrastructure capacity. We have from Queensbury and we have from Glens Falls that they would love to bring us more capacity. It exists. Jim, you keep saying Moreau has to just buy more capacity, but it's important to know who's going to pay for that, and that is the company that's going to be using it. So as much as we have to arrange for it, we're not paying for it necessarily. I mean, we will be, but...
The users are paying.
I know what it kind of has it sound like. Okay, so all the residents in the town of Moreau are going to have to pay for more capacity. Well, actually, the users do. And if you guys use 16% of the capacity, they're going to pay for 16% of the capacity.
No, that's not how that works. So that capacity fee is in the user's fee.
There can be, as there are with the Skimmerhorn apartments and a lot of some of the Skimmerhorn projects, different agreements where the developer pays for it.
Direct. Instead of going through the town.
Well, the developer would probably, the developer pays for it. It wouldn't be on someone who lives in a single family home.
And that's in their buying fees and their credit tax fees and things like that.
That's not unusual.
Myself, if you want to look for an engineering study to see is there capacity within the infrastructure, within the pipes, within the system to handle that volume of that added volume. But that would make sense to me. If you're concerned about future development, I guess that always makes me nervous. We run into this with traffic. I mean, you need a developer today, you can't develop because in the future somebody else may want to have that traffic capacity. We find a way to improve the infrastructure to understand it within our code. Okay, I've looked over the code on the industrial park and I can't find anything in it that limits necessarily one use to less than a certain capacity.
Well, the GEIS just may have threshold.
It said you have to look into it if they're going to. But that was mainly to make sure there was enough capacity for further development there. Right?
I don't know if it wasn't beyond the industrial park. I mean, I think the GEIS was intended not only to assess impact within the bounds of the park, but within the bounds of the community. An EIS is a community-based thing, not just site-specific.
Well, but the GEIS was specific to the industrial park.
It was for that project.
But right.
It looked into impacts well beyond the boundary lines, for example, transportation, as well as wastewater, employment, and
taxes and so on. It wasn't, you know, the physical impacts are not limited to that acreage. It's a fairly brief document. I'm sure the report itself is more extensive, but the part that goes on is just a...
It's like hundreds of pages. I don't know what you
look at. Okay, the GES, it's basically the summary narrative is the only thing I've seen.
Oh, okay.
I assume there's a lot of books.
Yeah, there's a couple hundred pages.
Yeah, gotcha.
One thing I was thinking in the context of the GERS, and knowing that we have entertained another applicant for the industrial park, that maybe this is something that we encourage the town board to do a supplemental. The mission has grown about 2,000 people. Major employers of Washington County are gone. There's more apartments. So that's something I'm thinking maybe the board resources we should consider a supplemental, given that we also have another applicant looking at, but that's just outside the context of this applicant.
Right.
And the GDI.
That's something you can go to the town board and say you think it might be important to look to do another GDIS.
Yeah.
But that's not this project.
No, it's not. That's just
right. So you can't say
yeah.
Stop now.
No, not at all.
Do it just because you've already necked it in this project.
Yes. Correct.
Another approach. Again, I was trying to be specific to kind of cover all bases, but I think that we as a board would probably get a lot from consulting on a preliminary basis or an initial consultation as to what this project is about and what they think the scope of our review might be, how they can help us. I would have him do the document review and then...
What kind of consultant? Like, are you
an environmental engineer?
An environmental engineer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that you talk about.
Well, I already have a list of who I think might be qualified, but you're going to need a multidisciplinary firm. I had six. Bergman, Labella, CT Mail, Clough Harbor, Delaware Engineering, and Change Environmental were the six that I had come up with.
As far as
who would receive a request for proposals if you send it.
Shouldn't that be public?
That would depend on what the scope of work was that was approved as far as
correct.
It's going forward.
Right.
And I think Epsilon might be another good enough to add. They're the ones that have been studying the Taunton, Massachusetts Ares project.
Should it be put out to bid? I mean,
it's
not so
absolutely. Doesn't that be put out to bid? It's a professional services agreement.
Right.
Can you look at Arcadis New Ramble?
What's that?
Arcadis. New Ramble. R-A-M-B-O-L. They were over right here.
Spell that again.
Ramble.
R-A-M-B-O-L.
I think it's R-A-M-B-O-L. B-O-L-O, yeah. And I have contact.
What was that, Arcadis?
Arcadis. They're at Change.
We have nine.
You might get a lot of declines right
now. We don't have to fill the board yet.
So, yeah, I'm gonna put you on the spot here because that's a really precise list. And I appreciate that. It's meaningful. For the sake of the board, can you give us like general categories? Is there any way we can do? I guess no. You know what? I'm gonna say I'll listen to that. I'm gonna ask the board if they would like to do something, or if there's more discussion.
I think Ann's put a lot of work into this, and it's there's quite a lot here, but she hits all the high points, you know, which, you know, for me would be odor, noise, and air quality, and how it affects the community, you know. But I do agree with Jim and Council that this is at site plan level, Yes, any recommendations we get are looking at developing the site. So, to be specific, John, 2A for the most part, I'm good with, 1, 3, 4, 5 specifically, good with sub. I think we've addressed 6. And then 2E is something that I'd be big on, is how we look at reporting and testing, as applicable to site. Reporting and testing emissions, incoming, outgoing, incoming feedstock, outgoing, so. These are things that I would put specifically.
So when it comes to reporting and testing, you're looking for the consultant to suggest how that should look, or to review, because I don't know that there's anything in the site plan that refers to them reporting and testing.
There isn't.
That's why I'm asking.
And jumping ahead to my own hypotheticals of this project, I would like to see that, a combination of Jim with his, partnership thing hit it right on the head. I want to see how a consultant, somebody who knows how to word it and knows the science behind it, would recommend a reporting structure or regimen that could be.
And I agree. I think that's where the solution lies here, because you can study these things endlessly. They're going to look at data, and then the applicant's going to provide more data, and you're going to question the authenticity of that data, and then you're going to ask again, and then he's going to provide more. I mean, it's really going to be about the operations of this facility in this specific context. Does it operate within code? Does it operate within the parameters of the approval? And if it does not, what specifically needs to be done to mitigate those inadequacies or violations? And that's why I thought the idea of this, post-approval policy is especially appropriate, because it deals with these things in real time, in real context. It's not data, it's not conjecture.
Yep.
It's too noisy. And we know it, we hear it. Fix it.
And if the consultant, per Ann's, summary, can put some numbers, some teeth to it, that can be incorporated into site plan, to go with that. Not just, arbitrarily too noisy or whatever. If a consultant could quantify that in some way, that would be very helpful for it, very helpful to me.
Jim, I get it. The good neighbor policy thing that you're putting forward here, what is the actionable part of that?
The actionable part,
they have to talk to the community, but what...
I think Eric makes a good point, because what I foresee is you're going to have a very intricate resolution here. All right? Should it be a resolution for approval? And I mean that in all sincerity. I'm just in the hypothetical. If it is a resolution, it is going to have, and I think Carl is probably going to be the one, charged with drafting it, but it's going to have very specific parameters where it can, as benchmarks, for the condition of the approval, if it is that, and those are the benchmarks that then translate into that policy going forward. So, for example, on noise, if it's going to be, 60, what is it?
65.
Decibels, at the property line, 65, then you go out there with a sound meter, and if it's 70, it's too much. You got to bring it down within your approval.
You mean what's in the code?
No, it's in the condition for the approval.
But we already have that noise consideration in our code already. So
right.
If somebody has a noise complaint...
Well, if you want a mirror within the code, fine. It can be specific to this project.
Well, no, my specific question is the good neighbor policy, the way you described it at first, was the community gets together with the applicant and they discuss concerns or whatever. What's the next...
Code enforcement. The only thing you can do, John, is code enforcement. The policy itself
So it all comes back to code enforcement. So my question earlier about noise was, if somebody feels that it is exceeding our code for noise, okay, and you guys are concerned about the noise, I'm sure. I will give you all sorts of kudos right now because I live in my property abuts with the Northland. I can tell you right now, it's well over 65 decibels. State is never going to shut that down.
Right.
Okay? So, it was there when we bought the place. We've learned to live with it. Okay? But it is there. So, I get that. But it would seem to me that if, and I've encouraged people over and over again when they say, oh, geez, such and such is making too much noise, it's doing something wrong. Get a hold of code enforcement. You can ask Jim's. He's got a constant complaint from me that we need to get more proactive on code enforcement. You talk to the town board about that. Those are the people that represent you. And it is their responsibility to act on that and to get a hold of the proper people. But if that's already in place... If that noise ordinance is already in place, then I guess I don't understand. Are we asking for a private consultant to look at their engineering report and see if their grinder is going to actually meet that code requirement? And if that's the case, okay, I understand that. But they're required for it to meet anyways, regardless, right? I mean, if they put the grinder in and it doesn't meet code, then it's an enforcement issue. Right?
Right. But what I'm suggesting here is, you know, it's a tailored approval. And I would assert that it can deviate from code. Because there may be certain instances present here, given this specific environment, the proximity of residential dwellings and all that, that warrant a deviation. And once you have a threshold, it can be held. And if this is a properly configured resolution, it can cite those specific thresholds that they will be held to, and they are accountable for.
So we're saying special rules for this applicant.
In this particular, no, not this applicant, this specific project in this specific environment. We're not being arbitrary and capricious. We have a ton of information here in the record that the neighbors have expressed concern.
Okay, so
it warrants this heightened scrutiny, and this is the parameters of this approval.
Okay, but if the noise level that's okay in our code right now for the industrial park is already inadequate for this applicant, would it not also be inadequate for the next applicant? In which case, the town should change that noise level for the industrial park in general, right? Not to just this particular project? Or
I would say that, and I know this to be true of both boards, the zoning board of appeals and this board, you guys always look at the individual applicants on their individual merits and in the individual context. And sometimes you have to come up with special provisions given the nature of that scenario.
Within the code.
Maybe it's more stringent than code. You can't ever be less than, but you can be more than.
In the simplest, like you made people like a sign could be different than the code because right. They like the sign to reflect that that was so bright. Mm-hmm. Might have met what the code said, that it was too bright.
You can shift the driveway location, you did tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all sorts of things you can do that they can't be relaxing the code, but they can always be more stringent than if it's properly based in a foundation of a good record. And we certainly have that here. As so justification, if you want the decibel levels to be lower in this instance, and you think it's appropriate, given the context of the testimony that we've had, then I think that would be a very defensible standard to upheld.
Okay.
The thing that's going to be tricky...
So you bring up the driveway on the applicant to see.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't know that we ask that applicant to do anything that we wouldn't ask every other applicant and project to do, and that is to site their driveway more than 600 feet.
Exactly.
Visibility, right. But if I'm gathering right for noise, you're asking for a different noise ordinance.
Maybe. No, I'm saying... If the I can't remember what the specific number in the code is. If it's 85 decibels and you
think it's appropriate here to have 75 given the circumstance, then that's 75. And then again,
so I'm not on the zoning board, because my opinion is if it's 75 for this project, it's 75 for all of them in the industrial park. I'm pretty sure the residents
are.
Unfortunately, John, you have to look at each project on its own merits. You can't.
Well, we do, and we have to look at it within the realm of the code that exists.
Right, but I think what Meredith was saying was a very good analogy. If you have a sign that can be 20 by 25. But it just doesn't look like it should be there, you can say, you're not going to have it that big. And if they want the sign bad enough, they say, okay.
Exactly.
And if we do that, we're allowing that we're leaving ourselves open for being arbitrary.
No, you're not.
We have to make sure we have reason.
Right, as long as you have a rational basis.
And a foundation for that.
So what do we do for spots? I mean, for Dr.
Now, that's going to be the one that's difficult. I know as sure as I'm sitting here, what's going to happen is it's going to be a hot, humid day in the summer. The air is heavy, and you're going to smell something.
Right.
So there's a high risk. Does it happen every day of the year? No, it does not. But
it would only have to happen once at my house, and I would want it. I don't blame these people for not wanting their backyard. If it's going to smell, nobody wants to go out in their backyard and smell something. Period.
But see, that one,
if I'm wrong, don't be out there correct.
Odor doesn't fall under DEC staff emissions. If it's odor coming directly from the material coming in. Okay? Right? So I'm agreeing with you. I'm not trying to be contentious. I'm trying to be very honest. All right?
But I think this is a more benign.
And the town doesn't have an odor ordinance.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's where.
But this is a specific case for this project.
This I can see what you're saying as far as, you know, this project may merit specific connotations based on odor because of the feedstock and because of the potential.
Okay. I can see that. Let me ask an expert that is probably developed.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is just something. Yeah. Right. This is something that DEC is right. Yeah.
And even in odors, if you get into it, based on the source, you look at the types of gases that are being handled, what's creating the odor, and maybe there's ways to mitigate that. But again, what I think is useful is if we can establish a post-approval means for constant monitoring. With real thresholds, the extent we can have them, and I agree, perhaps a talented engineer or consultant of a qualified nature could provide us those thresholds that give us real teeth.
Yeah. Or at the very least, a general idea of how to manage that, along with the threshold. How do you decide when it's something that has to be handled?
So is it enforceable? And who enforces that?
Well,
if you had a code, then your code enforcement is...
Yes, yeah, but I would say, Mike, if we have a well-written resolution that where it can, in every instance, is tied to numerical thresholds and quantification, then you have something that's enforceable.
Okay.
It's when you get subjective and say, we don't want it to smell, well, you know, that's very subjective. But if we can break that down... You know, and quantify. I'm not saying we're going to be able to on every facet of this, but I think we can tie this down very well. And I know emotions are running high right now, but I feel it would be very constructive to have a required structured means for dialogue and an opportunity for face-to-face exchange between neighbors who've got a complaint and the perpetrator.
Absolutely.
I can't help sort of feel that would be constructive and helpful.
With a set of quantifiable standards.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yep. I think that's good. I just wanted to know what after they get together and discuss it, what is the action on it as far as what's,
if it's on the site?
Well, the typical quote, say it's a noise issue. Say you come up with 75 decibels at the property line and it's 100. And even noise is going to be tricky. It's a leaf-on, leaf-off condition, humidity, wind. all those things, you know, can affect, you know, noise travel. But okay, it violates the noise standard. Biochar, the enforcement notice is issued. You've got 30 days to come into compliance. Biochar goes out and contracts with a foam spray company, for example. They put insulation in the building, pulls the noise level down. Now we have a compliance situation. That's just an example.
Well, and that's how I would see it happening within the town structure that exists right now. What I was asking you is, you're talking about this particular thing, this good neighbor policy. I think it's a great idea for the company to work together with the community, discuss concerns. Maybe there's things that can be fixed, you know, like nothing, and makes for good
exactly.
neighbor relations. But what is the enforceable part of that? If
it's the resolution. It's going to be the resolution. And I'm talking about a very atypical resolution from what you're used to doing.
Okay.
You know, these usually come off the floor. You guys do your best to formulate it based on your deliberations. This is something, I think in this instance, I'm talking about multiple pages, highly detailed, links, specific elements of this product.
It's part of the site plan approval. So
that's part of the site plan approval.
That's what makes it important.
Yeah, so it's not just a good neighbor policy, John, that is kind of like...
That's a little loosey.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. Is it more than just that? Because it sounds like a PR thing to me.
No,
that's not what you want then.
No.
I'm sorry, but this is a great conversation. Once you get to talking about site plan, can we kind of focus and circle back to Ann's requests and the specifics that you want Jim to put in the RFP? Because from what I see gathered right now, the specific requests are to have a full document review for something. You know, just a full document review.
And then Eric, I had a proposal. Eric, is that again?
Yeah, I mean, I was hitting the highlights of my
part.
You guys
voted
for
the
quality.
Well,
and
to that point, Eric, just so you're aware, you said 2A, one, air quality, transportation, odor, noise.
Yep.
And then I skipped
down to...
The consequences
of PFAS. Yep, seven.
Yep, but not the other one.
Nope.
I guess my question, though, Eric, would be the way Ann has this written is she wants it, and of course, with the framework of Part 2 of the EAF. Again, you've got to get out of the EAF. You've got to get out of SEAGR. I am here to make sure that they don't sue you, and I have to defend you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like you to do it properly.
But so, as far as having the, you know, third party or an expert, whatever, really, those are the ones, those are the bullet points for number two.
But have them do what?
It all ties into E. Because for reporting, monitoring, testing, you know, how do you craft something for odor? You know, how do you set limits and something enforceable in a site plan resolution for odor? I mean, I guess I'm tying 2A and 2E together.
So you're looking at it more, Eric, as let's look at E.
Yeah.
And say, okay, E, how do we do the reporting, monitoring, testing with respect to air quality, odor, noise, not looking specifically at what's the air quality, because DEC is going to look at that in the air quality.
Right. So, you know, in my own thinking of this project, you know, how do you keep the applicant as presented on the applicant's site? You know, you got to come up with quantifiable measures to put onto a site plan to have something to enforce, you know, for odor, for air quality, for, you know, for all of that.
So that's E.
That's
so it's
E.
Really
it's
not
it's
A.
Most,
it's E.
They're
no,
tied together.
I don't think you can do E without A. You
well,
know
you
what you're making. Correct,
Eric? You do have to know E. The odor is, you know, like Jim said, that's the hardest one.
Noise and odor are the hardest.
So.
Yeah, I don't really see, I gotta be honest with you, I don't see traffic volume wise being this is very infrequent. It's gonna be though the quality of that mitigation in terms of transport of the biosolids in and the product out.
And the scheduling. Could be a scheduling issue.
And that's easily quantified and easily monitored in regulates.
Right, and the applicant does have that in their site plan, in their submission, that, you know,
it's
schedule.
Not a site plan, that is.
Well, that would be something for the consultant to quantify, you know, to put some teeth to the schedule, because the applicant has stated it's going to be so many minutes or so many hours apart or whatever, so trucks don't get stacked up.
I think that if there's any objection called to the preface, if you delete in accordance with the framework of the EIAAF, the balance of list is okay.
Well, no, I don't think that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that...
You're telling me we can't do something in the framework of the EIAAF, but that's the language that is troublesome to you.
Yes, but what I'm saying is I don't think it's all okay. I don't think that... I thought I heard the board say water and wastewater was fine. And there was
not the whole.
They were members of the board.
But that wasn't. And then there's also 8 and 9, and it says any other matters. I mean, that's very broad, and I'm not quite sure. I'm sitting here thinking as the engineering firm that gets this and going, I can't respond to this because I don't know what they want. And you want to craft it, Jim, you respond to things with it. And you want to craft it so that if I'm looking at this, I know what I can do, and I can do it.
See, I think what Scotty added in here is the idea of what's the end game here. And that is, you know, this consultant is going to assist with the development of a quantifiable and enforceable set of conditions as part of the approving resolution. That's going to be the basis for, you know, the post-approval policy going forward.
Correct.
That's the end game.
So I'll tell you what I'm trying to do at the moment. Okay? What I'm trying to do is, and you're welcome to do this. If you feel very strongly about the list that you put up, you can make a motion right now. And I can ask for a second, and we can take a vote. But if you get voted no, then it's done. I like some of the stuff you had. What I'm trying to do is see if we can...
Is it done and that you guys will not vote on anything further? Because
No. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to see if we can parse out a list that seems to have support, that we can start working on building something here that we can act on. Does that make sense?
Can I go about that?
Yeah.
I think that's what we're
doing. And I'm okay with going either way. We can go the way that I just mentioned. We can start there and then break it down. But I'm just trying to build something instead of tearing pieces off.
Right. Well, I would start with scope of work paragraph 1. I'd leave it intact. And number 2, I would strike in accordance with the framework of part 2 of the EIF. And I keep everything that I have listed there. And I strike in 9, whether or not specifically called out by the EAF. I keep the balance of B, C, D, E. I would take 3 out regarding Article 92 and reliance on a written opinion from Carla that Article 92 of the code does not apply.
But if it does, it will be enforced.
It doesn't apply.
But it doesn't.
I
think what's reasonable here is to monitor the feedstock coming in, the biosolid feedstock. It's been portrayed as being of a certain profile, a certain makeup. That can be constantly monitored and checked. And is it in accord with what they forecast?
Well, I think Carl feels confident that the code does not apply.
But
it doesn't have to. One way or the other, we can still do what Jim said. We still monitor it, and you still put, and you still quantify it.
But then the reference to Article 92 of the code is meaningless.
Right.
But what is important is that it's monitored and it meets the profile as.
And
so maybe then, with regard to item 3, we have the consultant advise on how we monitor the compliance.
I think you have that, and you already have that. Proof. Yeah, reporting and monitoring and testing biosolids to the facility. It's already been.
The federal, state, and local requirements. So that includes, we would say, including Article 92. And E4, reporting, monitoring, and compliance with other federal, state, and local requirements, including Article 92. Is that what you're thinking there?
I don't know if 4 is kind of vague to me, but, you know, when you, for me, E.
Oh, I've been moving on. Okay.
Yeah, I'm E1, E2, and E3. You know, are the my triggers there.
Well, for, which are, what are you looking at now?
So 2E1, 2E2, and 2E3.
And I would also have 4, 5, and 6.
So, Anne, other than taking out the references to the EAF and taking out 3, you want to keep everything in that you've already added?
Yes.
Can I just, and I'm really not trying to belabor this, but I'm a dumb lawyer, but what, when you say conduct a review of the following documents, what are they conducting the review for? I think that's what Jim was trying to get at. Like, it just says conduct a review. Okay, I'm looking at a 200-page GIS. For what purpose?
They have to look at those documents to answer the questions raised in 2 and 4.
So that's different then. You don't want a review of the documents. You want a review of the documents. You want them to answer these questions using the documents.
Yeah.
Well, no, again, I'm trying to make it so
this
that...
This is the way I would prepare a scope of work. I mean, we can talk about different ways of stating it, but we need to look at these documents and then answer these questions.
Well, they're going to happen to some degree because they're relevant to the project. We're going to look at the entire project file and plus selected elements in the GEIS that are relevant.
It's not like what they're going to do, say, this document says blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
They're going to say, having reviewed it, being able to answer the questions that follow.
Right. So basically, one is we are providing you these documents to aid in your review as possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so I make a motion that that's what we do.
I think it needs to be rewritten.
Right, by that.
This is time to look at it, and then we can do that at our next meeting.
Okay, that's
It's 13 after 9. There's no way that we can come up with a resolution that can be acted on this evening as far as the exit. I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I know it's late for everybody, but I'd really like to accomplish stuff, not just talk about it. We can help that. So,
second the motion.
You could accomplish it. You seconded the motion. Anyone on the
board. Seriously, she's the only one who's seconded. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Right. I'm
so you have a motion.
I have a motion.
On the table.
I think
everybody
got copies of this in advance.
You need a second to discuss. You have a motion. Let's get a second, then you have
yeah,
I'm just reiterating what the motion is. So everybody
okay, yeah, I'd like to hear that.
Okay, the motion is to keep the scope of work that I propose with one being conduct of review of the following documents, then going on to 2, and based on that review, evaluating and making tentative assessments of potential impacts of the facility, including, so I'm deleting references to the EAF, I'm leaving all of the impacts that I would like them to assess, and then I'm taking out the compliance of Article 92 of the Town Code, with the understanding that it's otherwise been covered here, and probably give us a written opinion on the subject. And then with regard to the GEIS, whether or not we can rely on it and whether or not further studies are required. And lastly, provide a written report of findings and meet with us to discuss those findings.
Is 2-6 coming out? Water passing?
I have it as coming out. So
I would have it stay in with respect to the infrastructures, whether it's suitable for the future. I think, John, how would you put that?
We'll look at it on a case-by-case basis.
A what?
That's been discussed quite a bit. We're looking at water and wastewater capacity on a case-by-case basis. We know we have the infrastructure.
We know we have the infrastructure.
Well, we have the potential for it. We have the water and the wastewater. That's it.
But I think we have the infrastructure for wastewater.
We have the water superintendent saying yes.
So
you're asking the independent consultant to review the determination of the water superintendent.
Yeah. Yeah, to me that's the
John, do you agree? I thought you had a concern with that.
No, what I said is the only thing that I can see from the wastewater and water perspective is if there's some reason to believe there's not going to be an adequate supply of water, which I don't see that, or an adequate capacity for wastewater, which Glens Falls has assured us there is. Okay? That leaves us with, is the infrastructure in place at the moment capable of handling that kind of volume? And we've heard that the answer to that question is yes.
Okay, I would agree to strike water and wastewater for the next campaign because that's not an issue.
So I have a motion. Do I have a second on this?
We're going to have to craft a motion, whether it's this one or different one.
Yes.
You know.
This is just looking for a motion to have discussion on this motion. I need a second.
Well, it's a motion to tell Jim to send out an RFP to the folks that he indicated that did the other thing with the changes to member Purdue's, and I don't know what date this came in, and I apologize.
You can call me Ann.
I don't know what date it came in.
It came in on the 26th.
Okay.
So
her response, her request for scope of work for the independent environmental assessment review of Surgical Biosource Solutions LLC facility. So you're with the changes that she made. That's your motion.
Okay.
It's not to discuss it. It's to tell him to send it out with those changes.
No. What I said is I have a motion. I'm looking for a second so we can discuss the motion.
I know, but I want you to understand that your motion is to tell him is making him move forward.
I realize what the motion was, but I need a second in order for us to discuss it.
I'll make a second.
There we go. And we have a second so we can discuss the motion. Eric, you were making comments on the motion. I just wanted to make sure that we got it in the right order.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that this needs to be worked out a little more. This is not, I agree a lot with what Ann's doing, but I think that the motion, as stated, is almost not.
I would offer this in the context of the discussion. If you would like, I would like to take a shot at refining this a little bit in lieu of this long discussion we've had and work in what I perceive as some new elements and send out a new scope for your consideration. The discussion we've had against the original document and the original intent.
With your experience as to what is wrong or attainable.
Right. I'm happy to do that, and I understand time is a consideration here. So, if I could have a week to do that, I'll have it to you by Monday for you to look at, and then you'll have a full week to look at it. And we can discuss it again at the next meeting if you want.
It's something that could be taken up. We would get it in time. We can take it up on the June 20th.
Yeah, I'll get it to you well in advance of that.
Do we have an agenda for the 20th?
Not yet. It's sorting itself out. We got two applications, three came in, plus, and one of them is the biochar project. So,
they're already on the agenda.
Yeah, so they're already on the agenda.
So we have a motion and a second. All right.
Well, they need to take their motion off.
And no.
No.
Well, I mean, if you would like to withdraw your motion and second, you can, or we can vote on it and pass or take Jim's referral of giving more time.
I just be aware that if motion is voted on, you can't bring the same motion back up again.
What's that?
That's
Well,
the procedure, it has to be changed.
Yeah, if it's voted down, it's got to vote it down.
Right, you can't just keep bringing in motion.
Yeah, it's got to be changed.
If I bring a motion up, is it the consensus without a vote, if you guys wouldn't vote for it? So, well, and you want to see what Jim comes up.
I honestly, personally, I agree with Mayor. I think I'd like to see it hashed out a little bit more. I think it's you, right? I don't like to ask them. I'd like to see it hashed out a little bit more and be specific. There are parts of this that sound a lot like, a complete overview that I think is maybe more than what's necessary. I think there's details of it that are super important, and I think we're getting it. So I would, I myself would feel this. I would like Jim to work it out, and we can certainly act on it in June 20th by then. We'll have it in
Today's the 6th. I'll have it out to you within a week, so that would bring us to the 13th, so we have a full week to review it before the next meeting. And obviously, if any of you have individual comments in the next week, get them to me. Or if you have individual comments after you've seen my draft, by all means, let me know and I'll work them in.
Will you send it in Word?
Yes, I will send it in Word so you can redline it yourself or mark it in yourself.
Okay, so I'm hearing no further discussion on this. So, can we still have a motion on the floor?
I'm withdrawing with understanding it wouldn't pass.
Okay. Except I don't know that we have that understanding.
Okay.
So you withdraw with the understanding that it would pass? I'm sorry. My hearing isn't as good as I know. Okay. You don't have to have that understanding. But you're welcome to withdraw temporarily and certainly bring it back up. Okay?
Yep.
So then the motion has been withdrawn. All right. And Jim, I do you want to vote for the board for you to take that action, or can you just do it for us because it's a great idea?
I can add that consensus of the board.
I think you can. Okay. All right.
Thank you for your input, though. It's been
anything
helpful.
Anything else on the subject before then? Hearing nothing. With that said, we will entertain a motion for adjournment if we're complete with our agenda.
Yes, we are.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion and a second for adjournment. Certainly not controversial. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, nay. Good. Thank you, everybody.